is Matthew Cleverly. I represent Deborah Springer in this case, and we are the appellant.
Would you like to reserve any portion of your 10 minutes for rebuttal?
2 minutes, if I could, please.
All right. Please proceed.
There are three key issues that we're looking at in this appeal, and the three issues are: number one, did the deed that the conveyance deeds that went eventually to Ms. Springer include an easement with them? And if they did the if we have a deed that conveyed the property and an easement, then the prescriptive easement issues are pretty much irrelevant because we stop at the interpretation of the deed, which has the easement. The second question then is, if there are no express easements, does Ms. Springer have prescriptive rights for access to her properties? And the third issue is, did the trial court err when it acknowledged the prescriptive rights but then placed land use restrictions on the servient owner's property, on Ms. Springer's property, and divided that property into a one-acre section that can be used for residential purposes and a four-acre section that can be used for agricultural purposes without focusing on the use of the road, really only focusing on the use of the property. Now,
let me ask you some questions about your issues that you just identified. The deed to which you refer, I take it as the statutory warranty deed dated January 17, 1974. That went from the developer to the original.
To the Coosters.
Yeah, okay. Yes. The trial court decided that the easement for the 20-foot wide road was associated with what is identified as Tract N in the original plat map. You apparently take the view that it also relates to Tract C and Tract D in the original plat. How do you get there?
That would be because that deed, when it would made the conveyance, included simply there's no differentiation in those legal descriptions as to those being separate individual plots. Although the property had been platted by the developer and the county had permitted those lots to be sold as separate 5-acre units, this conveyance was one conveyance of 20 acres of parcel plus an easement.
Do you agree that the legal descriptions in the statutory warranty deed basically describe four different parcels?
I would agree that, yes, they can be interpreted to look at four different parcels.
And the easement language is associated with the last of the four parcels, is it not?
Well, I think that's the argument is that simply because it's the last item in the list doesn't mean it only applies to the preceding item in that list.
Okay. Let me ask you a different question. The trial court in its decision apparently made the determination that with respect to Track C, that's the property south of the roadway, that your client did not have the necessary elements for prescriptive easements for a 10-year period. What evidence do you rely on to counter that determination that she had the elements for a full 10-year period?
I think that the trial testimony as it was presented at trial was that there had been continuous use of that property for agricultural purposes, and that the only access to that property was to be going up the road and then through the gates into that property.
But my point is this. You have to have 10 years of continuous presence of the various elements. The trial court found, essentially, and I think he used some dates there, that there was some use for this period, some use for that period, but in the intervening period, there was not the required use. Whose testimony undercuts that?
Well, I think Ms. Springer's testimony was that they had raised cattle for the full time of their 25 years of ownership on that property and had raised cattle on both sides of their property, lot C and D, for that full 25 years. I think there was some miscommunication or misunderstanding on the trial court about this 17-year period where Mr. Urbeck said that he was the one that raised the cattle there. That wasn't what the testimony was. Ms. Urbeck's testimony was, I have raised cattle there from the time that we moved in, and it was my cattle, and then it was our neighbor's cattle that we leased the land or allowed him to raise his cattle in there as well. Mr. Urbeck was a one of the users during part of that time that he also grazed cattle in common or in conjunction with the Springers. But the Springers had been using that property for agricultural purposes during that entire time. The express easement that we get from the deeds...
Well, let me ask you another question to follow up. Gamboa out of the Supreme Court perhaps has a bearing on this case, and it replicates a determination that this court made earlier about whether or not use is presumed to be with the permission of the title holder. Can you address that and how it applies with respect to Lot C?
Sure. The three questions that the court had posed was, what impact does Gamboa versus Clark have on this case, and is it dispositive of this appeal? The second question was, does the presumption of permissive use apply here? And the third, if yes, does the record show that the presumption of permissive use has been overcome? So my first response is that I do not believe Gamboa versus Clark applies in this particular case. The reason being is that Gamboa stands for the proposition that the initial presumption is that there is permissive use of the roadway when there is a reasonable inference of neighborly sufferance or acquiescence. And that's the key of what we're looking here, is that there has to be that presumption of, or that evidence of neighborly acquiescence or sufferance. Here the facts don't follow in that line. First of all is that at trial, Mr. Urbeck acknowledged that the Coosters had already obtained prescriptive rights prior to Ms. Springer's purchase of the property. So that wasn't really an issue that we raised at trial.
That was with respect to Lot D, where the residence was.
That's right.
There was no stipulation with respect to the balance of Lot D.
You're right. There was no stipulation as to Lot C.
Okay.
And the question as to whether Lot D can be divided is a different issue, but that goes onto that third issue. But here is that the Coosters had purchased all of this property, were using that property, and they had the division of the roadway coming between the two pieces of property. I don't think that there was any indication that that the Urbecks, at the time that the Coosters started using that property, were allowing them to use Lot C or use the road to access Lot C as a neighborly accommodation. In fact, the evidence...
Is there any evidence that they objected to the use?
That the Urbecks objected to the use? I think that the evidence of that came from Mr. Urbeck's testimony when he said that when the Coosters started building their house, they were originally building their house on Lot N, which is the house that has the lot that has the easement. When they moved that house up to Lot D, he saw that they were doing that, and he indicated in his testimony that he was concerned about that, but that he didn't think that he had the legal right to stop them because they had the easement through Lot N, and they could use the easement through Lot N and then come back into Lot D.
You have used your opening time.
I'm sorry?
You have used your opening time.
Thank you.
Would you like to stop now and save your remaining 2 minutes?
I'm sorry?
Would you like to save your remaining 2 minutes?
Yes, please.
All right.
Good morning, Your Honors. Larry Trivett, for the record, represent the respondents, David Urbeck and Adelba Urbeck. I'm going to go ahead and try to address each of the issues as raised by the appellant in this case with regard to first issue being the claim of an express easement. The deed doesn't support that claim in any way, shape, or form. You look to Exhibit 1, the plat segregation. There were 16 separate properties created. None of the parcels abutting 99th Avenue Northeast had express easement rights. All properties, all lots, not abutting 99th, did in fact have easement rights. The deed from the developer to Mr. and Mrs. Coosters described four separate properties. Each one ended with a period. Period means period, and we start a new legal description. The last lot was tracked in, which did not abut 99th Avenue Northeast, and in fact was granted easement rights over and across the Urbex Tract O. The deed also included a Tract E, which was not contiguous with any of the with the Urbex property. Mr. and Mrs. Or Springer's argument simply doesn't have any merit, and I can't see under any reasonable argument that there were, in fact, express easement rights. So the question then becomes, did they acquire prescriptive easement rights? We acknowledged at trial as to the west 132 feet where the house was located, that Ms. Springer has, in fact, acquired easement rights. But as to track D and C, she simply did not come forth with any evidence to show that there had been continuous and adverse use, continuous over the requisite period of time.
Was the parcel the house was located on segregated for tax purposes?
It was. It was actually treated as two different parcels for tax purposes, and that was shown, I think, by one or two of the exhibits that were admitted at time of trial. So what you had,
but there's no subdivision for platting purposes.
There was no subdivision for platting purposes. So let's go ahead. I'll just address the issue of Track D. Prescriptive easement rights are limited to the use in which the property would have been utilized before. We acknowledge that the west 132 feet with the house was in fact used as a residence. She had access to it for that. The east 550-some feet was always agricultural use. Track C, always agricultural use whatsoever. And I disagree with Mr. Cleverly. The evidence at trial showed that Mr. Urbach, for a 17-year period of time, maintained cattle on that piece of property. And after Mr. Cleverly, it was a Mr. Lopez who repeatedly came and asked Mr. Urbach for permission to do certain activities on the easement roadway. So, in my mind, the trial court did, in fact, find that Ms. Springer did not satisfy her burden of proof.
So Lopez had permission through the title holder, Urbach?
That is, he would come to Mr. Urbach and ask Mr. Urbach to do certain things on the easement road, for example, a power line, installing a water line under the road, and those types of things.
So it wasn't Springer who asked for that?
It was Mr. Lopez who asked for that permission. Now, the next issue, and it was raised by the court in the three questions that were submitted to counsel on the 13th, is essentially, does the presumption of the first question was, does the presumption of permissive use in Gamboa apply in the case? And of course it does. Gamboa's facts are pretty much analogous to what we have in this case. The holding as permissive use limited to the elements of enclosed developed lands, that we do have that, and whether there would be a reasonable inference of neighborly sufferance, and of course we've got that too. The only thing that was set by Mr. Urbach, and was in the trial court's finding number, fact number 22, which stated, during the Coosters' ownership of Track D, Urbachs were aware that the Coosters did not have easement rights over and across the Tract O for the benefit of Track E. However, so as not to create a conflict with the Coosters, Urbachs did not interfere with the Coosters' use of the roadway to access the residence. There was no argument. There was no dispute. They used it for over 25 years plus. The rule is that subjective intent, whatever Mr. Urbach thought, isn't relevant. So it's really looking to the actions of what the parties did or did not do. They mutually used the roadway. They did it without dispute or conflict for the 25 years. Under Gamboa and this court's earlier decision, clearly the presumption arises. There was no evidence presented at time of trial to overcome that presumption in any way, shape, or form. It applies in this case. If we follow the rationale and the ruling and holding of Gamboa, that element is, in fact, missing.
Let me ask a question. For one of the March 1988 deeds to Springer, the one that relates to Lot C, there's easement language. Does anybody have any explanation about why that happened?
Or is the court, one of the deeds that was given with regard to Lot C, I believe, omitted the easement language.
What I'm getting at is there's some reference to Springer believing that she had an express easement by way of a deed subsequent to the original deed, if I'm understanding
that. That is correct. That they're Kuster's conveyance to Springer's.
Right.
There was some easement language in one of the deeds as to one of the parcels.
Okay. And what's the explanation that the record shows for that, if any?
Well, I think the only explanation is that Kuster believed that they had easement rights over and across the 20-foot over the Urbex parcel because of the grant and the deed.
And I take it it's your position that if there wasn't, in fact, an express easement in Kuster, then there couldn't have been any conveyance of an easement to.
That is correct. Okay. They would have no authority to go ahead and make that conveyance to the Springers. The second question, if you ask, does the record in this cause show that the presumption of permissive use has been overcome? And of course, the answer, in our opinion, is no. There was no evidence of conflict, as in Gamboa and Clark. The parties, again, used the easement continuously without argument. What impact does Gamboa have on the disposition of this case? Springer had the burden of proof to show that the presumption was overcome. They did not do so. So what do I ask the court to do? We acknowledge that she had easement rights to the western portion of Track D. We stipulated to that. We follow that stipulation. As to Track D, I think the trial court's decision was incorrect. There was no overcoming of the presumption as to the agricultural portion of that parcel. There was no subdivision of Track D. And as C, the trial court's decision was entirely appropriate and should be affirmed. And finally, we're requesting attorney's fees on appeal. Any questions?
Thank you.
Okay.
The Gamboa doesn't apply in this case. If it does apply, then the presumption's been overcome. The evidence at trial was that Mr. Urbeck testified that he was aware of the Coosters using the lots, that they were accessing the lots over that roadway without his consent. He believed that.
Heinrich versus Dunbar preclude that argument.
I'm sorry?
Heinrich versus Dunbar, that's a case where the argument was made that because people believed the easement was a public road, they lacked the requisite intent to establish a prescriptive easement.
And the subjective, you're correct, the subjective.
The court said, we don't look to the subjective intent. We look to what you could see if you went out and watched how they were using it. So why do we care about what this person believed in terms of whether they had rights or not?
Because if we're looking for a separate and distinct act that shows some adversity to the owner of the easement, we're looking at a house being moved from one property to another property, and then the access to that house being used over that same roadway. That act of moving that home onto a different property and then continuing to use that same roadway for access indicates that there is a hostile intent of adversity of the Coosters to use that roadway.
How's that any different than any of the other observed use?
Is it different than the other observed use?
It wasn't hostile. It apparently was deemed permissive.
Well, I think that if
your argument, you're saying there's something qualitatively changed in what a third party seeing this use would observe because they were going to a house. How's that so?
Well, the qualitative difference is that the house was on a different property, but they didn't put in a different separate access to that property. They used the same one that they were using for the other property.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. So for the benefit of the attorneys who may have arrived a little late. We took case number 4.